Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and around the world in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. Now, for more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on business, private business. Right after this. You know, we Americans talk a lot about private business, and we use terms like private ownership, private property, private rights. But we also use terms like stocks, bonds, negotiable instruments, licenses, and permits in our pursuit of profit and gain in our business transactions. Well, listen to this. Did you know that stocks and negotiable instruments are the exact opposite to private ownership? That bonds are the exact opposite to private property. Public business licenses are the exact opposite to private rights. And permits are the exact opposite to private business. And why is it that we see small business being subjected to such a constant barrage of attacks by government at every level, from Washington to your hometown? And what can you do to protect your life, your liberty, and your property from these incessant attacks by OSHA, the EPA, the State Tax Commission, Zoning and Planning, the IRS, and the swarms of government agents and agencies that are eating out your substance? Well, you know, there's a lot you can do, and the first step is to inform yourself as to the legal alternatives that you have between public business and private business. Now, if you'd like to learn more about private business, why don't you call and order our free general law CD package first? That's the place to start. And let me tell you more about what you're not supposed to know about private business. Remember, it's educational, it's entertaining, it's informative. Best of all, it's free. You can call and order one right now. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. Click onto our archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. That's georgegordon.org. We've been talking about business and business stories. There's a story in the Bible that talks about business. A lot of times I get asked questions concerning business and women. Women. Can women do business? You mean, can mere girls buy, sell, and trade? Women oftentimes complain about the glass ceiling, and they complain about we're not getting equal pay, and we're being discriminated against. Well, ladies, maybe you didn't know this, but God provided in the Scripture a system of law that includes females, believe it or not. And in Numbers chapter 30, there's a whole chapter here that deals with females and females making contracts. Now, if you're religious, you probably went to church and maybe you heard this and maybe you didn't. And maybe you even memorized some verses over here. But remember, memorization is the antithesis of education. So, in order to pervert or pollute biblical understanding, the religious guys, the preachers over there, they have induced you to memorize these verses. And when you memorize something, then you know it. Well, when you know something, then you can't learn anything. I mean, how can you learn something that you already know? So, memorization, then, is the process whereby we deceive you into believing that you already know this, And when you've memorized it and you know it, then you can't learn. If you can't learn, then the story doesn't help you. Now, stories in the Bible are designed to educate you. It's to promote your thinking processes. But when you memorize something, you don't think about it. You already know it. Let me give you a couple illustrations. Listen to this story as we're progressing along here. It's in Numbers chapter 30, verse 1. It starts off like this. And Moses spake unto the heads of the tribes concerning the children of Israel, saying, This is the thing which the Lord has commanded. If a man vows a vow unto the Eternal, or if he swears an oath to bind his soul with a bond, he shall not break his word, and he shall do according to all that proceeds out of his mouth. Now, in my day, you know, when I was a youngster, a man's word was his bond. And if you had said to Rocha or Silva or Bagnuda or Tertelli or somebody, let's write that up. Let's take that into our lawyer and let's him draw up the papers. Why, those men would turn their backs on you and they would not do business with you. And that's because a man's word was his bond. If, for instance, Rocha said to Sousa, I will be over to your place after we finish our barn work. I will be there with two tractors, two wagons, and three men to help you haul hay. You could rest assured that on Tuesday, when we finished our barn work, which would be about 10 o'clock in the morning, and we would then go over to Sousa's with two tractors, two wagons, and three men, and we would haul hay. You could take that one to the bank. If a man said, the check is in the mail, you knew the check was in the mail. And if you didn't receive it, you wouldn't blame the man that said he sent it. You would blame the post office because you knew that that man's word was good. Now, that's not the case today. Let me tell you. If somebody says to me the check is in the mail, I tell my wife, that means he's going to mail it sometime in the near future. That does not mean the check is in the mail. And like as not, a couple days later, it won't come, and it won't come, and it won't come, and then you'll know, well, it's like I told you. Today, people, their word isn't very good. But notice here in the Scripture, if you vow a vow unto the Eternal, I mean, if you tell God, I'm going to do this or that, He expects you to perform. But if you vow a vow to anybody else, if you make a bond is a contract. You know, you tell somebody, here's what I'm going to do. Then there's a requirement here from God Himself that you do it. Now, and if a female, if a woman also vows a vow, makes a contract unto the Eternal, and binds herself by a bond, being in her father's house, in her youth. Now, you may make this bond to God, or you may make a contract with somebody else. Go over to Proverbs chapter 31. This is what we call the Proverbs 31 woman, or the Proverbs 31 lady. And this lady, she goes out and she buys a field. I'm not kidding you there, ladies. I mean, there's a woman mentioned here in the Bible, and she went out and bought a field all by herself. And then she paid money for it. And she paid with it with her money. In the Bible, we find that we practice strict property rights. Now, you ladies out there, you don't practice strict property rights. You practice community property. Community property. In fact, you will say, well, here in our state, California, it's a community property state. Hey, lady, you're not whistling Dixie. You're right, that's a community property state. But you didn't get that out of the Bible. You got that out of the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. So if you're wondering why you got a glass ceiling and you're being discriminated against, don't blame God. You go blame yourself. You go blame your church. You go blame your religious philosophy. That's where you got that. You didn't get that out of Proverbs 31. You didn't get that out of Numbers chapter 30, girls. So, her father hears her vow and her bond, wherewith she has bound her soul, and her father shall hold his peace at her. Then all of her vows shall stand, and every bond wherewith she has bound her soul shall stand. So, when my wife makes a deal, and then she reports the deal to me, and she says, hey, here's the deal that I've got cooking over here. What do you think of this? If I hold my peace, then I am bound by the deal. And the reason for that is that my wife is a chattel property. I own her. She's mine. It's like my dog. So when my dog bites you, what are you going to do? Sue my dog? When my bull knocks you down, what are you going to do? Sue my bull? When my wife makes a deal with you and then reneges on it, what are you going to do? Sue my wife? You're going to sue me. And that's because my wife is an agent. And so when my agent out there makes some kind of a deal, then I'm bound by it. You can rest assured, boys, that when my wife makes a deal, she runs it by me. Now, sometimes I don't hold my peace. Then I say, no, I don't want to buy into that. I don't want that deal. And then she'll call you back and she'll say, well, my husband said he didn't like that deal and he's going to do it. So before she closes the deal, she always tells you, I'm going to have to run that by my husband first, and then we'll talk about it. That's a built-in safety net that you ladies have. A built-in safety net. That means overs for you. It doesn't mean overs for me. If it comes out of my mouth, I'm stuck with it. If it comes out of your mouth, well, if my husband doesn't approve of it, then it's overs. Now, if her father disallows her in the day that she hears, not any of her vows, or of her bonds, wherewith she has bound her soul, shall stand, and the Eternal shall forgive her because her father has disallowed her. And if she had at all a husband, when she vowed or uttered aught out of her lips, wherewith she has bound her soul, and her husband heard it, and held his peace at her in the day that he heard it, then her vow shall stand, and her bonds shall wherewith she bound her soul shall stand. But if her husband disallows her on the day that he heard it, then he shall make her vow which she vowed, and that which she uttered with her lips wherewith she has bound her soul of no effect, and the Eternal shall forgive her. But every vow of a widow and of her that is divorced, wherewith they have bound their souls, shall stand against her. Okay, hang on a second here. Let me show you something. Hell, we practice that to this day. You got a deal you want to do here, and so you go buy a house. What's the first thing the banker tells you? He says, you got to have your wife sign. Why? Because it's community property. She can't own property by herself, and neither can you. That's just one of those little freedoms and little sidelights that we have to wave when we want to practice communism. So, a female now who's divorced, oh, she can make a contract. She can make a deal. A woman who is single and emancipated can make a deal. So you ladies out there, to this day, whether it comes here from Numbers 30 or it comes from the civil law, if you've got a husband, your husband has to sign with you. Not for you, he has to sign with you. In the scriptural aspect, in the common law, your husband over here has the veto power. And that's because if the deal that you make goes south, your husband has to pay it. If I've got a kid, 15 years old, and he goes out and hits some old lady over the head and steals her purse, you're not going to sue my kid. You're going to come sue me. I'm the guy that's responsible. This is why when you've got juveniles that won't mind, won't follow the fifth commandment, life and death is the power that the parents have over the child. Why? Well, if the kid goes out and kills somebody, we stone the parent to death. That's why. So if you don't want to get stoned to death, you better keep your kid under control. Picture this. You got some punk down here in Phoenix, and he shoots somebody on the street corner. Kills him. Under the Mosaic law, we're starting to look for the father of the kid. Might even want the mother along with him. Boy, that'd straighten out a lot of juvenile delinquency if you put that law into effect, wouldn't it? All right, now when we're talking about making contracts over here, a widow or a divorced woman can make contracts even by herself, just like a single man can. An emancipated woman can also do it. Now, if she vowed in her husband's house or bound her soul by a bond with an oath, and her husband has heard it, and held his peace at her, and disallowed her not, then all of her vows shall stand, and every bond wherewith she has bound her soul shall stand. But if her husband has utterly made them void on the day that he heard them, now I want you to underline the word, on the day that he heard them. This is what we call the doctrine of latches. You have a right, and if you exercise your right, then it's a right that you possessed and you exercised. If you fail to exercise the right timely, then the doctrine of latches overtakes you, and failure to object timely is fatal. Now, you'll notice here in the scripture, on the day that he heard them. Now, that doesn't mean you have 24 hours. A day begins at sundown, and a day ends at sundown. From the time that you've heard this, gentlemen, you have that day with which to repudiate it. So if it's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and sundown's at 6, you got 3 hours. If it's 9 o'clock at night and you heard it, you got until 6 o'clock the following day. So tuck that one away in your heart. It's almost as good as Leviticus 23:32, which tells you the answer to a riddle. When does the day begin? It begins at sundown and ends at sundown. That's why every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God is important. Sometimes it's only mentioned once. And this is where it's only mentioned once. In the day that you hear it, latches, starts to run. And it expires at sundown. So then, whatsoever proceeded out of her lips concerning her vows or concerning the bond of her soul shall not stand. Her husband has made them void, and the Eternal shall forgive her. Every vow and every binding oath to afflict the soul, her husband may establish it, or her husband may make it void. But if her husband altogether holds his peace at her from day to day, then he establishes all of her vows, or all of her bonds, which are upon her, and he confirms them, because he held his peace at her in the day that he heard them. But if he shall in any way make them void after that he has heard them, then he shall bear her iniquity. These are the statutes which the Eternal commanded Moses between a man and his wife, between the father and his daughter, being yet in her youth in her father's house. So you may have a young woman here, and this young woman wants to go out and buy a car. She wants to go do something. She wants to make a contract. She wants to take a job. You know, I mentioned this before. Let's suppose you got a 15-year-old kid, and I come over and say, "Hey, kid, you want a job?" He says, "Yeah, I'd like to do that." And then I say, "Well, come on over here, and here's what we're going to do. We're going to work on the weekends." And you say, "Well, my dad doesn't let me work on Sabbath and on Saturday." And I say, "Now, are you going to listen to your old man, or do you want to make some money here, kid?" And the kid says, "Well, I want to make some money." I say, "Okay, well, then let's come over here and work on Saturday." Now, you hear about this, and you come over and say, what is this, Gordon, that you have my son working on Saturday?" And I say, "Why don't you butt out, old man? You know, your kid's 15 years old, and he's decided he wants to work." does a 15-year-old kid have the capacity to make that kind of contract? And the answer to that is no, he doesn't. Now, when he's 18, in some states he does. Under the Mosaic Law, when he turns 21, he does. When you have a female over here, you got the same law that applies to everybody. There's one law in this country, ladies. Just one. And the law that applies to the men applies to the women, and the law that applies to the woman applies to the man equally. Always remember that. That's called due process and equal protection of the law. Equal protection of the law. No glass ceilings here. Now, this concept that you're entitled to equal pay for equal work is nonsense. If you don't like what this guy's paying you, quit. And go practice Proverbs chapter 31, establish your own private business, and then go to work and pay yourself whatever the hell you want. You know, the sky's the limit. What can you create? What can you produce? What can you do? So write that down. Proverbs chapter 31 and Numbers chapter 30. Now, somebody's going to write me a letter and say, well, see, these deal with vows to the eternal or vows to God, and so that doesn't have anything to do with contracts. Wake up here. What vows are you going to make to God? That you're going to pray three times a day? You think I'm going to disallow my wife's vow when she says I'm going to pray three times a day? I couldn't give a rat's rectum less. But when my wife goes out here and says, hey, listen, we're going to deliver three cows to you over here, and here's the money that we want for them, and I say, wait, lady, what are you selling those cows for? No siree, Bob, I don't want to sell those cows for that price. Now I've got an interest in her vows that she vows. Those are her contracts. Now remember, a vow is something that comes out of your mouth. You know, you exchange wedding vows. You know, that's a contract. You're standing up here at the altar, you say, yeah, I'm going to do this, that, and another thing. That's a vow. That's a contract. That's a verbal agreement. Now, all contracts are verbal. Did you know that? That's right. All contracts are verbal. And that's because a contract is an offer with an acceptance over time with consideration. The offer is verbal. The acceptance is verbal. Now, the consideration can be reciprocity, it can be money, it can be wheat, corn, beans, honey, and oil. And the time, you know, is specified. And that's, well, how much time? When are you going to perform this? And when you put that time in there in the consideration, that's your vow. And God will hold you to it. Remember now, when you make a law, a contract is a law, and when you make a law, it cannot return again. A man's word is his bond. Well, ladies, a woman's word is her bond, unless your husband or your father disallows it. Now, once you're married, your father's out of the picture. Once you're divorced, your husband's out of the picture, and you're bound by your own vows. And once you're widowed, you don't have the protection of your husband. And once you're married, you're emancipated, and your father doesn't come into the picture. And so you girls are going to have to grow up and be big girls now when you're out here making contracts and making deals. So tuck that one away in your heart. All right, so that's number one. Now, what is a warehouse receipt? Warehouse receipt. It's a contract. It's a common law contract. Now, a contract can be written. You can take your verbal agreement, reduce it to writing, sign your name, that's your seal. And now you've got prima facie evidence of the contract. And it's always good to write them up. I'm not opposed to written contracts. I tell people all the time, you need to put that in writing. And that's because people forget. You know, over time, they kind of forget. And then they say, well, here's what our agreement was. And then the next guy says, well, no, that isn't what our agreement was. And, you know, blah, blah, blah. And so, you know, Then you have a litigation come up, and you can bring the written piece of paper in, and you can say, well, here's what our intent was when we made this agreement. And over time, we've kind of forgot how we wrote that or what our intentions were. And so here's what it was, and so that's what we're going to stick by. And that's what the judge is going to determine. Well, there's a thing here called a warehouse receipt. And this warehouse receipt is kind of an unusual piece of paper. It's a contract for the delivery of goods. It could be a delivery of services, but primarily it's the delivery of goods at some future date. It could include or it could concern money, but it doesn't have to. Here's an example. Back in 1841, there's a guy that's raising heifers, and he needs some money, is what he needed. And his heifers weren't going to be ready for market for another year. Heifers have to be 2 years old. Some of them have to be three. I like to raise mine up 3 years before I have them calve, so I don't breed them till they're two. Then they come in when they're three. But this guy's got some heifers that he wants to sell, and so he says, I need to raise some cash. And I've got these 25 heifers over here. So he goes out and he puts them on the market. And he says, look, you know these are Gordon heifers. And you know these heifers are A number one purebred Jersey heifers. I need to raise some money. So I'm going to issue some warehouse receipts. And I'm going to collateralize my warehouse receipts with these heifers. Here's what I'm proposing to do. Now, you know next year when you come in here to buy these heifers, they're going to sell for $2,000 apiece. But here's what I'm going to do. I am going to discount my heifers by 25%. You pay me $1,500 cash up front right now. That'll give me the investment capital that I need for my project. And I will continue feeding these heifers just like I have. And when the heifers are mature next year, you come back with your warehouse receipt and give it back to me. And then I will sell you this heifer. You've already bought and paid for it. I will give you your heifer. And you will only pay $1,500 for this heifer instead of $2,000. The advantage to you is this. If you'll give up your $1,500 today, you're going to get the heifer and $500 in 12 months. So that means that your $1,500 is going to make you 25% interest over the next 12 months. Now you'll notice here that interest is against the law in the scripture, but this is not a violation of the interest prohibition. This is a warehouse receipt. This is a business transaction. This isn't interest. You're not paying interest on this. In fact, I'm not paying interest on it. I'm going to give up a higher price at a later date. But furthermore, you run the risk that the price of heifers may drop to $1,000 and you're going to lose $500. So, you know, business is business, and business goes two ways. It's like a sharp two-edged sword. So when it comes time to redeem your heifer, we don't know what the value of that heifer is going to be. We expect that it's going to be $2,000 because that's what it's been in the past, but we don't know that. I'm expecting that it's going to be $2,000, but I'm willing to give up the speculative profit and sell it for $1,500 because I need the cash today. Now, you come over and you say, well, Gordon, I like your deal, so what I'm going to do is buy 10 of your heifers. Here's $15,000. I'm expecting to save $5,000, and I know your heifer's good. Furthermore, I know Numbers 30, and I know you know Numbers 30, and I know that your word is as good as gold. Now, I've got the $15,000 that I need. You've got 10 warehouse receipts. Redeemable in one heifer each. You can get one Gordon heifer for that receipt. So you go off and you're doing your thing, and one day one of your creditors comes up and says, hey, Tom, you owe me some money and I want you to pay me. Now you owe this guy about, you know, $3,000-$5,000, something like that. Let's say that it's $15,000, $30,000, $45,000. Say you owe him $4,500. And you say to the guy, tell you what I'm going to do. I'm going to pay you the $4,500, and I'm going to pay you with a Gordon warehouse receipt, redeemable in 3 Gordon Jersey heifers, worth $2,000 each upon maturity. See, you can't get those heifers today. You can't get those heifers until this warehouse receipt matures. This is the way you buy bonds. You go in and buy a U.S. savings bond, and it's denominated $25, and you pay $18.75. See, when I was a kid, we used to buy these, what they call, I think they were called United States savings bonds. In the war, they called them war bonds, but, you know, you pony up $18.75, but when you cash them in, you get $25. Isn't that special? All right. All right, now, we're doing the same thing here. We're issuing a bond, only it's called a warehouse receipt under the common law, and we're not paying usury and interest. This is a business transaction. This is the way the Arabs do business. See, Arabs don't charge interest. It's prohibited in the Quran. Interest is prohibited in the Bible, for all you Muslims out there, in case you didn't know. We're just as prohibited from that evil as you are. You know, so there you are. Now, we practice it. I don't mean to, you know, to whitewash it. Yeah, we're over here wallowing in usury, and you'll notice what the penalty is. We have now been impoverished. We're losing our shirts. The strangers that are within our gates have risen up high above us and brought us down very low, and we haven't reached the bottom yet. So, a warehouse receipt, then, is something different than an ordinary receipt. See, you people go in, you buy something, and you walk out, and, hey, have you got your receipt? Hey, save your receipt. In case you need to come back and exchange that, you have to have your receipt. There's another thing over here called a bill of sale. See, people don't use bills of sale, they use receipts. Wait a minute, there's some important differences here. What's happened to us is we have been converted by our government and our educational system. We've been converted. You see, years ago, we used to be sovereign citizens and heirs according to the promise. And we had servants that worked for us, and they did our bidding. These were called public servants, and we elected them to office to carry out our public business. We operated in private business, and then when we elected these people to office and gave them some powers, they came to us and said, Master, wouldn't it be a good idea if we educated your children for you? That'll give you more time so that you can play the prodigal son to the full. And we said, well, that sounds like a pretty good idea. Why don't you go ahead and educate my children for me so that I can go out and play the prodigal son? And we did. And over time, our government has educated our children, and now our children are practicing the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto. They're not practicing the 10 commandments anymore, and they have removed us now from our warehouse receipts and our common law practices, from our property, and they have reduced us to bond servants in our own land, and now they have our power of attorney, and now they are dictating to us how we ought to live, and now they're threatening us, and they're saying, and if you don't follow our instructions, we're going to collapse your economy. As old William Bendix used to say, what a revolting development this has turned out to be. All right, it's the midway point here. Let me give you a reminder that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Remember, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. Now that's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. All of it can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order yours by calling the law school at 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, why don't you go to our webpage, georgegordon.org, click on to the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Now, the sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. These endorsements, these recommendations that we give, don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing are necessarily going to reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoints may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. Now, these opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear in this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertisers, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. There's a couple, three cases here that I'd like to share with you. It deals with business, and private business is carried on in gold and silver coin. Public business is carried on in commercial paper. Now, commercial paper are things like Federal Reserve notes. The income tax is predicated upon commercial paper. God told us to not use unjust weights and balances, and he told us, "Thou shalt not steal." He didn't know what he was talking about, so we fixed his mistake, and we created a Federal Reserve Bank so that we could have paper money, stocks and bonds, so that we could go out and cut a fat hog in the back and make a lot of profit and gain. The income tax is a tax on that profit and gain. Now, conversely, there isn't any tax on property. Property is the holy grail of Anglo-Saxon administration. It's the foundation to our common law. It is the basis of all of our liberties. Now, back in 1933, when the powers that be came into power in Washington, wanted to implement the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto, they had some problems and they needed to overcome them. The number one problem was you can't tax people's property. You cannot tax people's labor because labor is property. So we needed to have a modality by which we could tax your labor. Now, it's the middle of the Depression and we need a constitutional amendment. What do you think the chances of getting a constitutional amendment through Congress, through the legislatures of the state, and ratified by 75% of them, to tax your labor in the middle of the Depression with 25% unemployment? Huh? So the conspirators said, well, look, what we need to do is appeal to these people's vanity, jealousy, lust, greed, and fear. First of all, the proletariat are pretty dumb to start with. They're naive. They're not educated in law. Therefore, let's write up a law, and in the law, we will pretend that we're going to give them a lot of largesse off of the backs of their enemies, the people that they hate the most, the rich people, the people that they envy, the people that they're jealous of. So Franklin Roosevelt pointed with glee at Henry Ford and said, did you know that Henry Ford in 1930 made $30 million? Let me help that along. Did you know that Bill Gates has $37 billion? I'm appealing to your jealousy now. Don't you think Bill Gates ought to pay his fair share? Don't you think we ought to tax Bill Gates so that we can have free medical services? That's what Roosevelt did. Now, in the process, the very first thing he did when he got into office was, he went to work on the bank holiday, which occurred on June 5th. House Joint Resolution 192 was enacted June 5th, 1933, to suspend payment in gold under contract. In other words, what God instructed us to do in Numbers chapter 30, the President of the United States, in conspiracy with the Congress now, is going to abolish. You signed and you said you'd paid in gold, but now we're not going to do it. We're going to renege on our word. Now, God is not going to forgive us for that, boys and girls, and he's going to hold us to it. And he has. He has. We paid. We are paying. And we are going to continue to pay. Because once we gave up our gold, which we were told to do by our leaders, our political leaders, we lost our ability to pay our debts at law. And as a consequence of that, we can't own anything. That's the way they implemented the first plank to the Communist Manifesto. Get the people to give up their gold. Now they can't pay their debts at law. They've reneged on their contract. And now they can only discharge in equity. That means they're making profit and gain instead of owning property, and we can tax the profit and gain because it's an excise privilege granted by government. The income tax is an excise tax. It's a privilege tax. It's the privilege that you're exercising to use paper money, which has to be licensed because it's against the law for you to use paper money. God told you to use just weights and balances. Remember? Then they promised you all these neat profits that you're going to make off the stock market and bonds. Hey, there's profits out here. Of course, we're going to have to tax those profits. But hey, listen, they gave you Social Security in August of 35, but they didn't impose the tax until the Victory Tax Act of 1942. Then when they employed that Victory Tax Act, it was limited to 2 years during time of war, and in May of 1944, they repealed it. But they didn't repeal the withholding provision. And that's where old A.J. Porth came in, because he was the business manager at the Kaiser Shipyards in Richmond, California. And he was alive and kicking when the Victory Tax Act came into operation in May of 1942. And he was there in May of 1944 when it was repealed. And when he noticed that the paychecks were the same, he complained. And he was told, shut your mouth. That's right. The union told him, shut your mouth. Now, A.J. Porth was the beginning of the tax protest movement of the modern age. Now, A.J. had some pretty good understanding, but he didn't have all of the pieces and couldn't connect all of the dots. But boy, he connected a bunch of dots. And one day he said to me, would you like me to explain checks to you? And I said, yeah, I'd like to. And I went into his office and he sat down and he explained checks to me, told me the story about checks. I'll relate that to you, but I don't have enough time today. It's called Joe the Barber. But let me tell you a story here about dealing in gold and silver coin and the benefit that you receive from it. I had a chiropractor. He was a student of mine in Modesto, California. And the franchise tax board, they were on him something awful. And for you Californians, you know, you got more problem with the franchise tax board than you ever had with the IRS. And so he complained to me and he said, you know, they're on me. And I said, what are you dealing in? And he said, Federal Reserve notes, checks, and credit cards. And I said, well, that's your problem. As long as you practice the 10-plank model, they got you. Why don't you stop practicing the 10-plank model? Now, here's a guy that's licensed, bonded, and insured with a Social Security number, marriage license, and all the connecting links. But hey, listen, I didn't write Chapter 31 or Title 31 of the U.S. Code and the chapters that support it. So let me tell you, the Constitution of the United States hasn't been repealed yet. They're going to repeal it, but it hadn't been done yet. And Article 1, Section 10 still applies, boys and girls. Well, it applies if you want to apply it. Now, most people don't. Most people want credit cards, Federal Reserve notes and checks. Well, okay, shut up and pay your taxes and be good. So this guy said, well, what would I do? And I said, well, you're charging $20 for an adjustment. And I said, that's way too much. And he said, my God, I'm hardly making it now at $20. I really need to raise my prices to $25. And I said, well, if you raise your prices to $25, you'll have fewer customers and higher taxes. Did you want less customers and higher taxes, or do you want more customers and less tax? And he said, well, I want more customers and less tax. But, now you see, when you go to public school and you're taught to memorize, your brain shuts off and you're unable to think. So I said, lower your price to $2. Lower your price to two silver dollars. $2 in silver. And so he did. Now here's the net result of that. At $20 for an adjustment, he was making $32,000 a year. This is quite a few years ago when $32,000 amounted to something. You know, $32,000 today doesn't even make the median average wage. But, you know, $32,000 back in those days was pretty damn good. That was the equivalent of a new house every year. You know, a new house in those days, an FHA 235 sold for about $35,000. And it would have been 2,200 feet. 2,200 square foot house, $35,000. This guy's making $32,000 a year. He lowers his rates to $2 instead of $20. And now he's only making $3,200 a year. Got that? $3,200. Now, how much tax do you owe on $3,200? Well, hell, if you were paying tax on it, it wouldn't be very much. And the tax is paid in Federal Reserve notes, remember? Now, the upshot of this is this. There is a tax to pay when you use Federal Reserve notes. Why don't we quit using Federal Reserve notes altogether? Why don't we start dealing with people that deal in real money? Let me give you an illustration. A gold miner in Alaska goes out and digs up 10 pounds of gold. Well, there's 12 ounces to a pound, so he gives up 10 pounds of gold times 12 is 120 ounces times 0.75. So he has 90 ounces of gold, fine gold. 90 ounces times $1,200 is about $108,000. He wants to go out and buy a new backhoe. He cashes his gold in, gets $108,000, triggers a tax, has to pay $50,000 in tax so that he can have $58,000 left over to buy his tractor. Hell, why don't we try it this way? Miner, go out and dig up 10 pounds of gold. That's your labor, and you've converted it into gold. No tax so far. Walk into the case dealer and say, hey, listen. Let me give you 5 pounds of gold for this tractor. If the case dealer takes the 5 pounds of gold for the tractor, how much is the gold worth? Well, it's worth one tractor, but it doesn't have a dollar value. There's no tax on raw gold. We don't know what it's worth. We don't know what it will refine out at. Everybody accepts it at 75%, but, you know, it runs 69 to 85. There's no tax due on raw gold. So in the old days, you know, people used to come into the bar and they'd say, okay, your drink is, he'd pour out a little on the scale, and the bartender would whip it back and forth and say, okay, here's your change, and there's the amount that I need for the drink. Okay, now let's try that with coin. We have laws in this country enacted by Congress. Congress enacts these laws. They create loopholes in the law. I don't make these loopholes. Hell, I don't even vote. I didn't vote for the people that wrote up Title 31, Section 5103 and 5112. Don't blame me. I didn't write the Constitution. I didn't put in Article 1, Section 10. But I'm going to use them because I suspect that God himself put them in there. And I stopped using Federal Reserve notes and I start using coins. So now when somebody comes to school, I charge them in gold coin, and then when I go spend the money, I spend it in gold coin. I don't want to earn more than $10,000 a year, because $10,000 is about where the filing limit is. And if I don't earn $10,000 a year, then I don't have to worry about filing tax returns. Now, you know, if you're a Social Security recipient and you're out working a little bit and you get to work, and pretty soon there's a limit. I don't know what that limit is. It's probably 10-7, be my guess. It's probably the filing minimum. And then you have to tell people, hey, I can't work anymore. You know, you're over at Walmart, and you have to tell Walmart, hey, I can't work 40 hours a week, because I'm going to get up here above my filing minimum, and then I'm going to lose my Social Security benefits. So there's a limit here. Well, I got the same limit. I can't earn over $10,700 a year. I think 10-7 is the magic number. And that's all that this guy in Modesto, the chiropractor, did. Now, another guy up in Kenai, Alaska, he did essentially the same thing. He's getting a little more money, though. He's getting $35 for an adjustment. His complaint was 90% of his business was in insurance and credit cards and checks. Insurance, credit cards, and checks, 90%. And that the insurance company was holding his payments back for 90 days. And then the credit card company charges him 6% to process this fee. And then a lot of checks bounce. I said, why don't you just convert all of your customers over to gold and silver coin, forget the insurance and the credit cards, and then I think it'll work out better for you. And you know what he said to me? He said, how in the hell are you going to convert these people over to gold and silver? You know, again, boys and girls, when you go to public school and they teach you how to memorize, your brain shuts off and you're unable to think constructively. Well, if you want somebody to do something, you need to ask them, don't you? Hey, you, would you please pay me in gold coin? And the guy says, well, why in the hell should I pay you in gold coin? So then you got to give him a reason. You have to give him some motivation. So why don't we offer him maybe a discount? Would he pay you in gold coin if there was a big enough discount? So I said, okay, let's try it. So you put this sign up over here on your in your office, and you say, okay, adjustments $35. Now, that's for checks and credit cards and insurance. Now, if you pay me with cash, C-A-S-H, that's $20 bills, the price will be $30. If you pay me with gold or silver coin, the price will be $25. And he did that. Now, this $25, that's 10 bucks. And so 10 divided by 35 is 28% discount. Would you pay me in gold coin or silver coin if you had a 28% discount? See, almost immediately, most people would say, yeah, for 28%, I'd go out and spend a little time, effort, and energy and get you. If I said to you, I want to be paid in Mexican pesos, I'll give you a 28% discount. If I said, I want to be paid in Russian rubles, I'll give you a 28% discount. Would you go get Russian rubles? Now, you know your customers, you know what their first complaint is? The first thing they have to say is, but, I don't know where to get Russian rubles and Mexican pesos. Well, one time I had a guy come in my office, and there was a book on my desk, and he said, hey, how much for that book? And I said, one silver dollar. And he said to me, well, I don't have a silver dollar. How much is it in real money? And I said, well, it would be $10 if you were to buy it in the bookstore, but I don't want to sell it for $10 because that would trigger taxes, and I don't want to do that. So I only want to sell it for a silver dollar, and if you don't have a silver dollar, I ain't selling it to you. And he said, what kind of a business is this? And I said, it ain't business. It's private. Not open to the public. Not selling books. You want my book? Pay me in real money. Where am I going to get it? I said, that's the question you needed to ask. Down the hall, second door on the left. That's Peggy. Go talk to her. He goes down the hall. He comes back with a silver dollar. You see, Peggy got a bag of silver dollars from Frank the gold broker. Frank the gold broker took the paper and he replaced his inventory and made a profit. Peggy now sells the silver dollars or trades the silver dollars for the paper. When she runs out of silver dollars, she'll have enough paper to trade to Frank again. And so now the customer comes back to me and he has a silver dollar in his hand. And I said, now that's what you need to buy this book. Now last week we wrote a check for $5 and bought the book. This week we sold the book for a dollar. We lost $4 in the transaction. Now the question arises, how much tax do we owe on a $4 loss? And somebody says, fair market value. Wait a minute. Fair market value does apply to people with social security numbers. I don't deny it. Those are taxpayers. But fair market value doesn't apply to non-taxpayers, and non-taxpayers don't have social security numbers, and people that don't have social security numbers and are non-taxpayers deal in property. And that's private business. And private business and property is not taxed, boys and girls. Not taxed. Congress does not assume to deal with non-taxpayers. Congress deals with taxpayers. Now, all of you people out there with social security numbers and TINs and bank accounts, you're taxpayers. You need to shut up and render unto Caesar that which is Caesar's. But we don't have to practice the 10 planks to the Communist Manifesto forever. And if at some point in time you wake up and you say, gee, I wonder what life would be like if I went back to practicing the Ten Commandments, then we can go back to just weights and balances and thou shalt not steal. Then we can go back to property and property rights and pay our debts at law. And then we can pay our tithes instead of our taxes. Hey, I'm out of time here again, boys and girls. I'm going to have to leave it right there and remind you that you've been listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. The Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school, and it is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. The Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly and has our radio log schedule and archives. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience. Hey, I'm out of time. I got to leave it right there. So we'll see you back here tomorrow night. Same time, same station. God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.